Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross here at Circus Sports Fab in Las Vegas, Nevada. RGM Michael Lombardi back home on the East Coast in Jersey. Good morning to you, sir. We've got a lot to get to in your neck of the woods. I don't know if there was like a bees hive that got stirred up yesterday there in the greater New York, New Jersey area, Michael, but we saw what happened with the Jets. And Woody Johnson came in after we get off the air yesterday, of course. And Joe Douglas, he's gone after 5 years as the GM there. And there's a lot of moving parts and tentacles with this story, Michael. So I want to get just your overview of it. When you saw the news that Joe was going to be out, what did you make of it? Because obviously they started with Robert Saleh. That wasn't enough. It feels like an organizational cleansing. Is that the way you see this?
Well, I think so. I mean, look, Joe Douglas was 30 and 64 as his time as a general manager. Really never came close to the playoffs, even though he got A's in every single draft, just so we know that. He got every single A you could possibly muster. He was the toast of every draft. But he won 30 games in 6 years, and everybody knew it. Joe knew it, that he was going to get fired. And look, there's an irrational human being running the Jets. His name is Woody Johnson. I mean, look, Belichick has made it very clear about, you know, Woody's tactical approach, which is ready, you know, aim, ready, fire, aim.
Right.
You know, and so, I mean, this shows you the dysfunction, and everybody in the Jet organization reliably reported to me is praying that the relationship between Melania Trump and Woody Johnson's wife, who are best friends, will manifest himself into Woody being sent back to Ireland and having to vest himself of the Jets.
Wow.
And then allowing his brother Christopher to do it. So this the Jets, if you're a Jet fan, you feel really sorry. I've often said my line about the Jet. Dean Martin used to say this. You know, he felt sorry for people that didn't drink because when they woke up, that's the best they're going to feel all day. and I twisted that into I feel sorry for Jet fans because when they wake up on Sunday morning, that's the best they're going to feel.
Wow.
Right. Because there's just no hope with your franchise.
No.
And the reason you have no hope is Woody. Look, Woody's going to listen to the league office, and the league office is going to pick who they want to hire in that Jet job. And that certainly will not be the most qualified candidate. That will not be the candidate that's willing to challenge Woody and say, look, this is what we need to do. Woody created the mess. Nobody wanted to trade for Devontae Adams. Woody did, right? Mm. There's an article out on The Athletic that Woody wanted to bench Aaron Rodgers
right.
after a game. You know, I mean, when you got an owner that's making these kind of decisions that meddling into your team, you have no chance. You have no chance. You know, what gives – I had dinner one time with Larry David, you know, the TV guy. And he said, I could call plays. He's a huge Jet fan. I could call plays. I said, no, you can't. You have no idea how to call plays, right? Like, these people think they can run NFL teams. They have no idea.
Oh.
It's hard. It's hard for people that have expertise in it.
That is amazing, by the way. We need a book on that dinner conversation because I know he did an episode where he says the Jets killed Carl. You know, a fictitious character gets killed for his fandom of the Jets. And this is kind of your point here. They can't take the heartache. 5.5 is the adjusted win total. 30-1 now to make the playoffs. This team had high expectations. They were 2-1 over the summer.
30-1?
How about that?
I mean,
that?
They should be 100-1. They're not making the playoffs. I mean, what point do people realize that they stink?
Oh.
We called them the ifers all offseason because if they could stay healthy, if they could play to the level that their team was in the past, they look good on paper. Could Mike Williams rekindle his career? Tyron Smith, Aaron Rodgers? And the answer to all those questions have clearly been no. The ifs turned into nos. They didn't turn into yeses. This is a bad football team constructed by the general manager who just got fired. He's got pieces of a team, but he has no cohesiveness within a team. I've been saying this for 4 years about him. You know, and then he trades for Hassan Riddick under the assumption he's just going to come to camp. And then he finds out his owner won't pay him any more money. I mean, it's dysfunction at the highest level. It's a billion-dollar corporation that's run because you got people that have no idea how to run a team. They don't. There's no cohesiveness. There's no alignment. There's no, this is who we are. Everything that you believe in terms of leadership and winning, the Jets do the opposite.
Okay, I got to ask you, I know you are very happy where you are. You've got Thanksgiving. You've got family. You don't need this headache. You get the call from Woody Johnson.
No, nobody needs this headache. You can't, Dave, there's certain jobs you can't win at. Right? There's just certain jobs you can't win. And as long as Woody Johnson's the owner of the team, you're never going to win. I mean, the guy sits at home, and I've been told this reliably, that he sits down in Palm Beach and he reads the internet, he reads the Jet blogs, and then he starts asking questions towards the people. And what he does is, because he's the owner, he creates dysfunction within the organization. He likes to pit people against one another.
Oh, boy.
So he has no cohesiveness. I mean, it's an impossible situation. You're never going to win there. It's like the Giants. They're never going to win there the way they're set up. The Giants need a cleansing, too. The Giants, the Jets being bad have only hindered the Giants from looking as bad as they are. I mean, think about it. The Jets are 3-8. The Giants are 2-9. They're both terrible.
Yeah, I guess.
Because their owners refuse to allow people to come in and set it up. The Giants' problem is basically no accountability. They've had so many people in that building. And this is somewhat of a tribute to John Mara, but it's also a shot at John Mara, is he's so loyal that he makes no changes. So there's no accountability. Nobody's on a watch. The only people that are on a watch based on wins and losses are the coaches. That's it. So when you have an organization that doesn't really care, I'm going to keep my job whether we win or lose. Even if I don't do a good job, I'm going to keep my job. You can't win like that. You can't. Everybody in the organization has to be predicated on winning. Winning. That's what matters most.
But that's
not the Giants.
It feels like whoever the next GM, whoever the next head coach is, whoever potentially the next quarterback is, good luck cleaning up that mess. Because, Michael, the way you just laid it out, it sounds like it is a total teardown, at least in the front office. And then you figure out what Woody's going to do. And that might be the problem number one, is that it's going to be what Woody wants to do and not what another GM wants to do, potentially in lockstep with a coach. So it might get even worse.
I think this, Dave, I think this too. I think what we're seeing in the league this year is owners that didn't change coaches last year are paying for it now with the season.
Yeah.
I think the reaction to being this, there's this notion of we need continuity. Yes, continuity is important if you have the right people. Continuity is not important if you don't have the right people. Because, you know, it's the old line, you know, if you're going down a road and you're lost, don't keep going. Just for continuity's sake, right? You better turn around. And I think you look at the Jets, you know, Woody didn't like Saleh. He didn't hire him. He should have fired him last year before the season started. Mm. They should have fired Nathaniel Hackett before the season started, right? They should have fired Joe Douglas before the offseason started. They should have got on with their team. But they didn't, and now they're paying a price for it. Same thing with the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
I mean, Jerry was so depressed after that Green Bay game that he felt his team underachieved when they overachieved, actually.
Exactly.
That he kept everything status quo and didn't add anything to his team.
Yeah, he thought they were right there, and maybe a change in coordinator with Dan Quinn going to D.C., bringing in Mike Zimmer would be all that would cure the Cowboys. That has not happened. We're going to get to that, too, in the next segment, because I think it's fascinating what you wrote today in the spotlight. I did want to, because I mentioned right there in your neck of the woods, it wasn't just the Jets that were getting a little bit cantankerous on a Tuesday. How about the 76ers? The good news is they didn't play yesterday. But then we get the news that Tyrese Maxey and Shams Charania reporting that basically challenged the former MVP Joel Embiid in a 76ers meeting for, quote, everything, Michael. That basically, you know.
Well, why is this news? Why is this news? I've been saying it forever. I've been saying it for 5 years. The guy's lazy. He doesn't work hard. He's fraudulent. Everything he talks about how important winning is, he does nothing to make wanting to win. Why is this news now? Like, I told somebody of one of my friends who covers basketball. I was like, why is this news now? I've been saying it for 5 years. The guy has no work. He's never been in shape. Everybody makes excuses for him. I thought the best line of the whole article that Shams wrote, I thought the best line, and it summed it up the best, really. It really summed it up the best, because to me, this is the problem with the with the 76ers organization, and this is what I've been screaming about forever. If I can get it up here on my computer, something's wrong with it. But basically what they said was the players went to Nick Nurse and demanded he coach them harder. And Nick Nurse said to the players, well, we got to practice harder. See, when someone controls load management and player participation, you got no chance. This is an organization that's built on softness. It's built on tissues. That's who they are. That's who they've been. This article just reinforces everything I've said for 5 years. This organization is built without any mental toughness, without any attention to detail, what a champion would want to win. It's all a collection of talent. Oh, we got Paul George. We got Tyrese Maxey. You got to work hard to win. You got to work hard to win. You can't just show up and say, oh, here we are. You know, it's a comedy. It's a complete, and I'm not even in the building and I can see it. I could see it from Embiid for 5 years. The guy he cried after the ball went in with Kawhi Leonard. He cried. You know, like, really, if it's that important to you and you're going to cry, why don't you get your butt in shape? All I care about now is winning so he doesn't show up on time. You really care about winning, right? You really care. I give Maxey credit for standing up to the guy.
I do, too. That was my takeaway, too, Michael. Like, to me, the Tyrese Maxey fandom that I have, like, you're trying to correct things in that locker room for a team that's 2-11, plus 210 to make the postseason. But think about that, Michael. Plus 210 to make the postseason with Joel Embiid. They're 2-11. So if it cares, he cares.
But he's not
winning.
Even the same player. He doesn't even know what to do on offense. He even admitted, I don't know what to do, because he doesn't come to practice. He doesn't practice.
And the other guys,
you just can't show up and beat a good team.
And like the other guys, hey, coach him. We need him to be coached. Let's practice harder, guys. Woo! Lots to get to on a Wednesday. Come on back. We'll talk about what's in the writing spotlight today.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We continue the Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you. Always love to bring in on a Wednesday, Michael, our guy Will Hill. You can follow him on X at Not The Will Hill. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. Host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. For me, that's a top five name for podcasts out there. I don't know what the other four are off the top of my head. But, Will, before we get to your picks this week in college and the NFL, is it true that there's a rumor in you and Michael's area that maybe some offseason baseball news? Could Juan Soto, in your gut, tell you that he could be leaving the Bronx?
Well, I would hate to jinx you, Dave, but congratulations to your Mets on getting Juan Soto. Yeah, I'm not trying to jinx it at all as a Yankee fan, but he's going to look good in your uniform. He was a good run with the Yankees. Yeah, I think it was Michael Kay who came out and said Steve Cohen's going to give him $50 million more than any other team, which is a nice way of saying Hal Steinbrenner is not going to match it. If they're motivated to give him the money, we'll see. I mean, it's all rumored at this point, but you're talking $600-700 million. The Yankees have the money. They need him. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm trying to jinx you a little bit. Congratulations to the Mets on getting Juan Soto.
It's not official yet, Michael, but you know what Will's trying to do. He's trying to get me all excited for this Juan Soto. No, I don't see any changes yet in the betting market, but if we're picking up what Will's putting down, that's significant.
We need to do an autopsy here a little bit. Like, Dave Ross is an interesting character, a Cowboy and a Met fan. Like, those two things, Will, don't typically go together. Right. Like, and Syracuse, I get loyalty to school. But like, this is like, there's very few Met Cowboy fans out there. Would you agree?
He's a complicated guy. He's a complex fellow, but I can't pile on him too much. I'm all over the map too. Yankees and Lakers and Vikings.
So
I'm all over the map too. But You make a good point for sure.
I tell you, Michael, that would be a story over a couple drinks for the three of us. I'll tell you how that happened. But you're right. It's not normal to be Mets and Cowboys the way I am. But that does get me excited if the Mets could land him. Let's get to some college football, guys. And, Will, I want to start with a big one. And I can't believe we're saying this is a big one here in college football for Indiana football against Ohio State. Is this the week where the shoe drops and they look back and they look like the old Indiana? Or do you think they're really live here?
Everyone seems to think this is just a matter of how many points they lose by. And I'm not so sure. Now, I think we'll know right away, because at the end of the day, Indiana is a bunch of transfers from James Madison. So it's possible you turn this game on and you see, all right, Ohio State, they've got the five-star, the blue chip guys. Indiana, it's a bunch of, you know, mid-majors who are overachieving or whatever. I don't buy it, though. I think Indiana's going to be right in this game. They're coming off a bye. They've heard nothing for 2 weeks except for it's a matter of how much they're going to lose by. They're going to get blown out. If they get blown out, are they still in? I think that motivates them, and I just think that might be the wrong way to look at the game. Ohio State's all beat up front. They just lost their center. Indiana's got some real studs in their front seven, their front four. The kid Kamara's a tremendous player. Signetti's a really good coach. I don't think, and we've seen this, Lombardi, with all these college football teams, this is not the usual college football where you have two or three teams, then a huge gap, then everybody else. It's a much more parity NFL type of college football season. I think with the transfer portal, the NIL, the talent is spread more through college football, where these the best teams, and Ohio State might be the best team, they might not be, but they're not as dominant. So I think Indiana's going to be right in this game. We've seen Ryan Day's teams be tight in big games. Indiana's got a lot of talent, and look, you could poke holes in their wins. They don't have any like great wins, but Ohio State played Nebraska. They won by three, a Nebraska team that beat Colorado, by the way. Indiana beat them 58-7, 56-7. Like, you can't say that's not a good win. I think this is going to be a close game. I wouldn't be shocked if Indiana won. Again, I think you'll know right away, but I will take Indiana plus the points here. I don't buy this idea that, you know, Ohio State can just name their score and Indiana's going to lose by 20 and be knocked out of the playoff here.
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, you're right. I think there's so much parity going on. And I watch Ohio State, and, you know, I know the announcers can't wait to tell you how great they are and what they do, but I think they struggled. I mean, I don't know. I watched the game. I thought they struggled a little bit in trying to beat Northwestern. I mean, Northwestern turned the ball over, kind of unforced errors. But I think to me, that was something I agree with you on. You know, Brian Kelly, you know, he's got $70 million coming to him, or else they'd be running him out of Baton Rouge. And you're going to take Vandy against him at home a night down in Tiger Stadium.
I like Vandy as a dog just because they play so well. They play perfectly if you're a better as a dog, because they run the clock. They just have these little short plays where they move the chains. They limit possessions. They're well coached. Pavia is a gutty college player. He's not going to be anything at the next level. I don't think he's a pro or anything, but he's a really good college quarterback. He can run. He can extend plays with his legs, move the chains, run the clock. And they have been incredible covering these numbers and winning outright as an underdog. And you hinted at it. LSU, I don't know where they're at mentally. This could be on the brink of disaster because they're not paying that coach all that money to come in there. This is year three now, to lose 3-4 games every year. You're supposed to win national championships at LSU. Saban won a title. Ogeron won a title. Les Miles won a title. And forget winning a title. He's not even with an expanded 12-team playoff, he's not even flirting with the playoff. I don't know where this goes for LSU. You hinted at the money. The money is a big factor. As they say in The Wire, money be green. I don't know if they have the money to buy him out, but I mean, let's be honest. He's not like a warm, cuddly character to begin with. He's not from there. I don't know if he's back next year. My guess is he is, just because of the money, but this could get ugly, I think, here for LSU, but I do like Vandy plus the points.
We know, and you know this, Will, I've been railing against Notre Dame being in the college football playoff. Not only are they in, they're number 6 team in the country right now, right? The Fighting Tim Murrays. They're going to lay 14.5 against undefeated Army. Is this trappy, or does Notre Dame say, no, we'll show the committee why they have us so high?
I think this reminds me a lot of the Navy game about a month or so ago, where they won by, you know, 30 plus points. I just think they've prepared for the triple option already. So this isn't going to be something that catches them off guard. And you look at Army, nice story. Same way a Navy was a nice story, but we're seeing this now in college football too, with the expanded conferences. You can skate through 9-10 games a whole season without really playing anybody if your schedule falls right. And they've just played, look, Florida Atlantic and East Carolina, Temple, Rice. This is going to be a major, major step up in competition. And Give Notre Dame credit. That was an ugly loss that second week of the season against Northern Illinois of all teams, who's basically a 500 team in the MAC. But they've taken care of business since. They've won. They've won convincingly. They've really been impressive since then. And I think they absolutely bury Army. I think prepping for Navy a month or so ago is a good test, really helps them in this game. And I just think they have much better players, much better athletes here than Army.
Yeah, and you're on the Colorado Buff train, Will?
Yeah, I just think Kansas is going to be a trendy pick this week, and they were last week, and they got home. First of all, this is not a true home field advantage game for Kansas because this is at Arrowhead. This isn't on campus. They're renovating that stadium, so I think that matters. And Kansas, look, the quarterbacks played well. They got a decent secondary, but they don't get pressure on the passer. They don't have a good pass rush. And if you don't pressure Sanders with all of that skill with Hunter and Horn, those guys, Colorado, if you give them time to throw, they're going to cut you apart. So I just think their ceiling is higher than Kansas. I think Kansas will be in the game, but I think Colorado ultimately wins. And, you look at the schedule, it's Oklahoma State the following week, and that game is in Boulder. Colorado, this is their last obstacle to getting to a Big 12 title game, which is just incredible. For all the attention they got last year, and they were just, irrelevant. They weren't that good of a team, but all we did was talk about them. This year, they've flown under the radar, and they're actually really good and possibly headed to a playoff. 2 years ago, I think they were winless. So incredible. You got to give Deion credit. He's brought the players in. We'll see if he can sustain it. We'll see if he stays there. But I think they win this game. I think they ultimately, go to the Big 12 title game. I just think their passing game is too good here for Kansas.
Yeah, money's coming in on Kansas. You're getting a better number laying the 2.5 than it was earlier in the week. Let's get to the NFL. And I look at that Viking game, and sometimes I go, does a team lose twice? And we saw it with the Bears when they had the heartbreak against the Commanders. They looked terrible the next week against Arizona. Do you think the Bears look terrible again after that heartbreak that they had last week against Green Bay?
Yeah, it's funny. As much as we were down on the Bears last week, there are a couple plays, a blocked field goal and a Hail Mary away from being, a 6-win team, which is hard to really wrap your head around. I just like the matchup here for Minnesota. I think Brian Flores going against Caleb Williams, a rookie quarterback, is bad news for the Bears. I think they'll get pressure. I think they'll probably turn them over a couple times. And if you look at the Bears, all right, last week they held Green Bay to 20 points. That's a nice job defensively. That was a strange game because the Packers had over 8 yards per play, 8.3 yards per play. There were only 6 possessions by each team in every game. And I think the NFL, that's about half of what you get. You usually get 11, 12 possessions in a game. To only have 6 possessions is really crazy. Both teams just, had long drives. It was an odd, fluky game in terms of that. But they did not play well defensively. But I just think Flores does a really good job on Caleb Williams. I think the Vikings, with their weapons, figure out a way to get in the 20s and probably create some turnover. So I will lay the 3 here with Minnesota.
You're not buying Antonio Pierce being able to out-coach Sean Payton this week, Will?
That is the handicap. It's Payton versus Pierce. This Bronco team is still underrated.
I knew it was.
The one thing you have to deal with the Raiders, they might have the best tight end in football, and Bowers, he's incredible, but the Broncos have a lot of skill at the linebacker position, a lot of athleticism, and the Broncos are not at their point of development where they're going to take anybody lightly, so I just don't know how the Raiders score. Broncos number one in the league yards per play allowed. I think the Broncos grind out a 7-10 point win here.
Will, great stuff. You got to check out the Should Have Bet More podcast as well, everybody out there, and Will, you and I on Saturday, is that the rumor?
I'm excited, man. It should be a lot of fun. And again, congratulations on Soto to the Mets.
Nah, don't do that to me. Don't play with my heart and my emotions like that. There he is, everybody, the great Will Hill. Give him a follow on X at Not The Will Hill. When we come back, Michael, we got a new segment. Take the points. I want T-shirts printed. Michael, will you take the points? We'll discuss next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Week number 12 in the NFL begins tomorrow night. Steelers and Browns. Dave Ross, Michael Lombardi here with you. Going to look at some of those coordinator battles, and we'll start with that game. But Michael, very quickly, I was thinking of this in the drive-in, as you and I talk about it all the time. You blink, it's week 12. It begins tomorrow night. Has the NFL conditioned us as viewers? I railed against Thursday Night Football. The product might not be that good. We get all of that. Could America really do without Thursday Night Football anymore? They did it to us years ago with Monday Night Football. I don't think we can get through the week anymore, can we? Like, we have to have our Thursday Night Football.
I don't see how we could do it, David. I mean, I'm so programmed on Thursday. Like, to me, the weekend starts on Thursday.
Right.
I'm just so used to it. Like, I know Tuesday and Wednesday I can catch up on Yellowstone or whatever show I want to watch that I haven't seen. you know, Friday's not a – Friday's going to be some college football game or something. And, you know, so I got 2 days to catch up if – you know, and so that's it. And I love it. I mean, and I don't care what anyone says, you know, about the quality of the game and all that. It's still the game, right? We still have to handicap the game. And the curiosity that you go into the handicap is, was I right? I right on this game? That's what drives you, right? You want to be right on the game. You want to see the teams to make sure that, you know, what you're handicapping and what you know, obviously some people are talking about how they handle the, you know, the from 1 week to the next week. I think that's really important. And I think one thing we learned in this business is don't let the wins entice you to bet the next week.
At 1,000%. Again, I'm fascinated by this Thursday night matchup because when I look at it, I go, it just feels trappy for the Steelers. And then I think about the Steelers and I think about Mike Tomlin and talking about Thursday night football. I'm sure he loves the challenge of this spot, right? Going on the road, divisional rival. Arthur Smith, first year offensive coordinator there for Pittsburgh against Jim Schwartz, the DC for the Browns. We know how intense Jim can be as well. Who wins this matchup in your mind? And what do you think Arthur's doing now once they change quarterbacks from Russell, from Justin Fields to Russell Wilson that he couldn't do maybe at the beginning of the year?
Well, I think what he's doing is he's got more plays in the passing game. Plus, Russell's throwing the deep ball much better. You know, and other than that horrible interception last week, he's cutting down on Russell's mistake. Look, one thing about Jim Schwartz's defense, it's not complicated, right? You're not going to get, you know, he's going to have a couple blitzes. He's going to try. But I think where Jim's running out of patience and running out of really the ability to dominate the game is his injuries have piled up on his defense. He's not the same defense that he once was. And, you know, last year they couldn't play defense well on the road. This year they can't play defense well at home or on the road. You know, typically you can't – typically when you play a Jim Schwartz defense, it's hard to run the football on. It's really hard. You have a hard time trying to run the ball. It becomes very complicated. You know, they're very good at stacking the line of scrimmage. They're very good at taking away one of the things you want to do. This year they're 27th in the league in yards per attempt. I mean, they can't stop the run. And here's the thing, they can't run the ball. I mean, again, those two things go hand in hand. When you can't run the ball, you can't stop the run. You know, and I think that's the problem. And their defense this year, the numbers, they don't turn the ball over. They're 30th in the league in turnover takeaways, right? They're 24th in points allowed. And the other thing is they can't make a play on the ball with their secondary. They're just not good enough. And I think when you look at their team, I mean, they gave up 473 yards last week down in New Orleans to New Orleans. Wow. Wow. 214 on the ground, Dave. Oof. You know, and so like that to me is the big issue. They gave up 434 to the Commanders. They've had games where they've given up. They've had two games where they've given up over 200 yards rushing. That's typically not what Jim Schwartz wants to do. He wants to stop the run, get you into third and long, and then use those wide nines to get up the field and make plays. But they can't stop the passing game either. They're 24th in yards per attempt. They're not a good defense this year. One of the things that I've learned is I've been counting on them being a good defense, and they're not. They've blown cover. Against the Chargers, they had free access touchdowns. They just had three touchdowns where they just blew the coverage.
Mm-hmm. It's rather fascinating, too. You look at the Steelers at 8-2. They're also 8-2 ATS. And then you look at the Browns. They're 3-7 ATS, 2-8 overall. There does feel like a correlation there. So I just say, as much as maybe the lean looks towards the Browns side here, beware. Pittsburgh's been really good, not just wins, but also ATS here, 8-2.
Well, I think the question is, how are they going to score? How do the Browns score?
Right.
They're the worst third down team in football. They're the 23rd worst team in red zone. You know, and then you're counting on them not to make a mistake. I mean, last week they had 443 yards in the game. Of course, you know, then they didn't turn it over. When they played the Chargers, they had three turnovers.
That's our Thursday night game to kick off week number 12. We saw a flip of favorites here. Seattle's now a 1-point favorite. You can find some pick-ems out there. Remember, the Cardinals were 1-point favorites. Drew Petzig's done a pretty darn good job as their offensive coordinator in Arizona. Mike McDonald, I thought he coached a really good defensive game last week against Kyle Shanahan and the Niners. How do you see this OC versus DC, well, head coach in this case from Mike McDonald?
I think it favors Drew Petzig because he's seen what he did. You know, what McDonald did last week was change his approach to more what we call spin the wheel defense, not get locked into one front or one coverage. He kind of changed everything. Every down was a new call, trying to get the 49ers off balance. Petzig sees this, and I'm not sure that they could stop the run of Arizona. Arizona's a good run team. Now, look, we know weather's going to be, could be a factor, rainy, cold up in Seattle, which I think certainly favors Seattle here. But the matchup, I think Petsic will run the football on him. I think Petsic does a really good job. And I just don't think there's enough talent on this defense for them to really hold up in Seattle.
And I'm fascinated by this Eagle and Rams game, Sunday night football in L.A. And, of course, you've got the old against the young, right? Vic Fangio has been around the block, seen it, done it. Sean McVay isn't exactly a spring chicken anymore, right? I think we just look at him and think, oh, he's still this young guy. Sean's won a Super Bowl. He's been around, too. What do you make of this matchup here for matching of minds and two pretty darn good ones?
Well, I think, look, one thing that this will be a good chess match. It'll be the adjustments, but they know each other really well, obviously. You know, with Vic being in Denver, Vic being in Chicago, I think, you know, Sean knows what he wants to do. Sean's got his line back. And as long as Sean has, the you know, Puka Nacua in there, where he does such a good job with him in terms of how he handles him, like he slipped him through the C gap last week to run a crossing route, which was really good. And the Patriots had no idea where he went. You know, he just does little things that make it very challenging on you. I really believe that, you know, Sean's going to be able to move the football. I think the bigger question is, can the Rams hold up? I mean, I never felt like the Rams were slowing down the Patriots. I never felt like they were going to get a three and out. I thought the Patriots were moving the ball too easily on them for me to have any faith that they're going to stop the Eagles.
Seeing some off the threes, I'm seeing some two and a halves populate out there. So Rams taking a little bit of money here before we get to that Sunday night tilt. Ravens and Chargers, you know, the battle of the Harbaughs. But when you look at the DC, you got Jesse Minter, the young guy coming in there from Michigan against Todd Monken, who's done a pretty darn good job, obviously, with this Ravens offense. Fascinating, because I know we're going to talk about John and Jim. What about Todd against Jesse?
Well, I think it's going to be really a challenge for Jesse, because as good as they play, they're the best red zone defense in football. They've done a really good job of keeping you out of the – I think they're going to move the ball. I think this game's going to come down to what does Monken have planned in the red zone. I think Monken's going to move the football on him. I think we saw the second half where Cincinnati really started to take command of the game. We saw the Chiefs move the football. Look, I think the Chargers are a good team. They're better when they play against lesser quarterbacks. I think it's a really hard game, a really hard game for the Chargers. Mm.
I look at that Cowboy-Commander game, and we can understand why the Commanders are 10-point favorites. But then it's Cliff Kingsbury, year number one as the offensive coordinator with Jaden Daniels, of course, against Mike Zimmer back in Dallas, 2.0 version of Zim. Doesn't really have the horses here. What can Mike do to slow down Cliff's offense?
Well, I think, to me, this is really not about the coordinators. This is about a mismatch in talent.
Yep.
I really think that. I think, to me, this is what what Cliff's got to worry about is not letting Parsons screw the game up, right? Mm-hmm. He's got to go in there saying, we got to take care of Parsons. We take care of Parsons, we're going to move the ball, right? And I think that's where Zimmer's like, we got to slow him down. We got to force. Zimmer's going to take the same approach that Mike Tomlin took, the same approach that Vic Fangio. We got to keep this quarterback from running the football. We got to keep him from running the ball. That way of playing Jaden Daniels has been declared. It's 2 weeks now, and Cliff's had 10 days to get ready for it and how to attack it. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge in the game. But Mike is operating with less players, and that's always hard on any coordinator.
Yeah, it looks like 11 and 13 for that Cowboy defense. They're going to have to try to keep Jaden Daniels in a box and not let him run. Speaking of running, we've got the ponies here on First Bet from Del Mar all the way to Gulfstream Park, Kentucky Derby, Preakness. Got you covered, firstbet.com. That's firstbet.com, the number one, stbet.com. Use the promo code VEASAN200. You're going to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days, up to $200. So head over to firstbet.com and do so today. One other one, if I can sneak in, just for Elliot Bowman's purposes. Gus Bradley against Ben Johnson in that Lions offense. What could Gus do to try to slow down Ben's runaway freight train offense?
Well, I mean, I think he's just got to take away that. They've got to kind of force this into a one-dimensional game. You know, you can't let them just have both balance and run and pass. Yeah. I think that's one thing. But look, Gus is not – this is what I complain about Gus. He doesn't take away anything. He just runs his stuff. Gus is all about running his stuff. It's not about taking away what they do.
I think it'd be wise to try to take away one of those options if it's possible. Adam Burke's going to join the program next. Get his best bets. That's next year on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We are back on this Wednesday edition here of the Lombardi Line. Dave Ross and Michael Lombardi here with you, everybody. If you are a VSiN Pro subscriber, then you know all the fine work that our managing editor, Adam Burke, does here on the network. You can follow Adam, as I do, on X at Skating Tripods. Joins us now on the Progressive Guest Line. And Adam, there's a couple games on here that caught my attention that you like this week. One of those is in Chicago. And we'll start there with the Vikings against the Bears. But maybe not a side that you like, but possibly a total. What do you think we're going to see between those two teams?
Hey, morning, guys. Good to be with you. Look, I mean, I think the first takeaway that I had regarding the Bears last week is that Caleb Williams looked good with Thomas Brown running the offense. And, you know, there's been so many knocks on Shane Waldron in the analytics community with just, you know, regular NFL observers, all the people that are out there just not really liking what they've seen out of this offense because they haven't really known how to use Caleb Williams in an effective way. And so Thomas Brown kind of gets him on the move a little bit. Caleb Williams has the 70 rush yards last week. They were eighth in EPA per play in that game against the Packers. And really that game was held under because of, you know, the pace of the game, right? Green Bay only had, I think, 43 offensive plays in that game. So I think we get a little more tempo. We get a little more pace out of the Vikings and Bears. And I think the fact that, you know, Brown kind of got Williams moving a little bit is a really positive sign going up against Brian Flores and that super blitz heavy defense. Chicago's defense gave up 8.5 yards per play to Green Bay. Now 60 of those came on the Christian Watson pass, so that skews the number a little bit, but I think the Bears defense is gettable and I think the Bears offense is going to improve based on what we saw last week. So weather could be a tiny bit of a factor, could be a little bit windy, but I think over 39.5 is the play in that Vikings and Bears matchup.
Yeah, I do think both teams will move the football. Again, you know, you're right. Weather will play a factor. It's Soldier Field. Somebody might want to tell Ryan Poles that, who built the team, because he doesn't seem to really care about weather. He thinks he can throw it all over the lot. But I don't know if you can run the ball. Last week, they were able to run the ball with some success against them. Swift got going a little bit, I think. And obviously, Caleb was able to run the ball. I think he had 8 carries for 70 yards in the game. So that does going to make a difference. It is going to be the challenge, because one thing I will say, though, Adam, what concerns me a little bit here is what happened last week was a declaration of how they want to run the offense, a 3-step drop rhythm passing game, what we call spacing, right? It was really a spacing game with rhythm. And Flores knows this going in. And so I don't think Halfley really did a good job of adjusting to it, whereas I think Flores is going to game plan to it, which I think is a big difference. How about Miami? I've been back and forth on this. I mean, New England shows some signs of life. I hate their offensive line. I don't think they're good. They're going to travel on the road. And I would never play an offensive line, a bad line on the road. But you like Miami here at home to feast on this Patriot team.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think from a narrative standpoint, you know, the Dolphins have a renewed sense of purpose right now. The AFC playoff bubble, I think, is pretty weak. You know, I know that Denver has had some good performances with Bo Nix kind of improving and all that. But I think that, you know, that last spot is kind of there for the taking. And Miami has a chance to get to 5-6. The remainder of their schedule, they got 2 games left with the Jets. They go to Cleveland, albeit in late December. So the weather could be terrible. But the Browns quit last week, let alone who knows what they look like in late December. I think with Tua back in the offense, you know, things are kind of back to where we expected them to be. Since his return in week 8, Dolphins are 3rd in EPA per play. They lead the NFL in drop back EPA. And New England doesn't really have a very good defense this season, despite the fact that Gerard Mayo is a defensive-minded guy, was a defensive coordinator, all of that. Maybe some things are kind of falling through the cracks now that he has to keep an eye on everything as opposed to just focusing on the defense. So I think Miami is very much capable of moving the football here. I think the Dolphins defense may be a little bit underrated because I think we still kind of think of them from last year's version, but they've improved this season. And also, I mean, they didn't have their quarterback, you know, offense benefits the defense in a lot of ways. So I think Miami's defense will continue to get a little bit stronger. And that offensive line for Drake May, I give him a ton of credit for the plays that he's making, but he's been sacked 17 times. He's barely over 200 passing yards per game in his 6 starts because there's not a whole lot of time to go downfield. Miami very much has the capability to create big explosive plays. So I like the Dolphins laying 7 here in a spot where I think they feel like they've still got a shot at being a playoff team. And I wouldn't disagree with them if that's their view.
Yeah, it seems like nobody's talking about that Tua contract anymore after he got hurt, and they really could do nothing without Tagovailoa behind center there. This Arizona and Seattle game, Adam, is perplexing to me because it's weird. I kind of liked it earlier in the week when Seattle was a small home dog, and I know it's just a point to flip the fave here to Arizona, but that always makes me a little bit nervy. What do you see in this one, and do you think Arizona can travel to the 12th man and get it done?
Yeah, I mean, obviously going outside could be a bit of a concern, and the weather doesn't look ideal for this game. I mean, it's Seattle. That's not really a big surprise. But look, I trust Jonathan Gannon and Drew Petzing. You know, coming off the bye, this is a team that has scored the first touchdown in 7 of their 10 games. They've scored on their first offensive possession in 6 of their 10 games. They're really good at the script, and they're coming off the bye. And I think that's a really important thing for them to go ahead and get out front and take the lead in this game. And look, guys, if they score first, then I can decide what I want to do, because you got Arizona basically pick them plus 1 in that range. If they score first, I'll get Seattle as a dog, can decide what I want to do from that point. If it sets up a live middle, if I can maybe get it high enough for that. So that's part of the thought process here for me. But the other thing is just, you know, the Cardinals over the last 5 weeks, 2nd in EPA per play on offense. They're doing a great job with Kyler Murray and the weapons that they have in this offense. They have the better defense in that span as well. And even though I still believe in San Francisco to a degree, I don't know if last week's win for Seattle was more about San Francisco or more about Seattle. The Seahawks were coming off the bye, still had less than 5 yards per play. They didn't look that explosive on offense, and they had a 2-minute drill drive that won them the game. So I'm not really sold on the Seahawks. I think the Cardinals are very much an improving team. I like them to go on the road and get the dub here.
Yeah, I do too. I think they're undervalued. I still think they're undervalued. Everybody doesn't. I worry about Kyler Murray playing in the rain and cold weather. He looked horrible against your Packers, Adam. So It really gives me some concern. I mean, they were like, and it was only 40 degrees, and they thought it was like sub 10 degrees. It was ridiculous. But we got the MAC this weekend. How good is that? We got the MAC on Wednesday night. You got to love Ohio Toledo. You got to love the game. So you're going to go, you're not going with the Rockets. You're going to go with Ohio, huh?
Yeah, I'm going to take Ohio in this one. Had Miami of Ohio last night. That one came through. Also nice to see my alma mater, the Akron Zips, do what they were supposed to do against Kent Reed, Kent Spell, Kent State. Nice to see them get the wagon wheel in that one. But, you know, I like the Bobcats here. I mean, Toledo is a team that, you know, Jason Candle's done a phenomenal job with this program over the years, but Toledo came into this week 87th in yards per play. This has historically been a top 20, top 25 type of offense in yards per play. They're just not there this season. Tucker Gleason has been banged up, but they're not creating a whole lot of explosive plays. To me, it doesn't seem like they have the same athleticism that they've had in the past, especially relative to the other teams in this conference. Now, defensively, they're terrific. They've held the opposition under 5 yards per play on the season, one of 33 teams to do that. But Ohio's done that too. And Ohio, to me, has the better offense. Also, the Bobcats need to try to keep pace here in the MAC, because there was a 3-way tie at the top at 5-1 to get to the conference championship game. Well, Miami of Ohio won last night, so now they're chasing them down. So to me, I just think Ohio has a little bit more to play for in this game. I think that they have a little bit more balanced of an offense. Toledo cannot run the football at all. I think Ohio is just more trustworthy, has the higher ceiling, and the money's come in on Ohio in this game. They're down to a 1.5-point dog. They opened up at 3. I like the Bobcats in this one. I got them at plus 2.5, but I think anything at a dog price is worthwhile.
I want to sneak in one more Maction game here, but Adam, as our managing editor here at the network, I wanted to ask you about that Black Friday special, because right now everybody can get it through May 1st for only $60. There is a ton that you're going to have access through all the way through, obviously, the college football playoff, the Super Bowl, March Madness. So again, VSiN.com/subscribe. Adam, tell the people what they get with this Black Friday special.
Yeah, I mean, you get everything we have to offer over at VSiN.com. This is undoubtedly our best offer of the year. And like you said, you know, it's not like you're just getting the rest of the NFL season, the rest of the college football season. This is going to take you through conference tournaments, which we do a preview of every conference tournament for college basketball, through March Madness, MLB season preview guide as well. This is an all-access pass to access to our betting tools, the VSiN live stream, all the different bells and whistles that we have. And of course, you know, in that span, we continue to think about adding different perks and benefits to becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Not to mention, we just added those Circa betting splits not that long ago, and being a VSiN Pro subscriber gets you access to those. So $60 through May 1st, best deal that we run all year, and I highly recommend that everybody out there take advantage of it.
Sold. Let's get to one more action play tonight. You're going to fade Toledo as the small home favorite. Are you going to fade Eastern Michigan as a small home favorite against Buffalo?
Yeah, this is another one where Buffalo took a little bit of money in this game. Look, guys, Eastern Michigan's a horrible defensive team. They gave up 33 points to Kent State, 34 points to Central Michigan, and those are games that they won. And Buffalo's averaged 34 points per game in their six MAC games here so far. The Bulls, you know, look, Eastern Michigan's looking for bowl eligibility, but I don't think that matters when you're a 5-5 team. I think Buffalo is the way to look in that one up in Ypsilanti.
Adam, great stuff as always. Always appreciate the time. Thanks for hopping on the Progressive Guest Line with us.
Have a good one, guys.
There he is, everybody. Adam Burke, our managing editor here at the network. All right, Michael, when we come back, is there a mutiny in the Giants locker room? We'll discuss next here in the Lombardi Line.